Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're looking at a fascinating piece from Charles Archer titled A Disruptive Biotech Venture at the Intersection of Luxury and Material Innovation. It's all about BSF Enterprise and their game-changing work in lab-grown leather. We're joined by Jeff Baker and Shay Connan from BSF, and in just a moment we'll hand the floor over to Charles to set the scene before diving into the conversation. So, welcome all.
Afternoon.
Absolutely. So I guess over to you, Charles.
Hello there, gents. How are you this evening?
Afternoon.
Good.
It's certainly afternoon here.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's early September. The children are going back to school tomorrow. My sanity is being shot for some time, to be honest. Yeah, do you know, I think it's quite fun because I've been watching you guys for the past sort of 2 or 3 years, and we have this lab grown leather. And there's nothing else in the market quite like it, is there? I'll ask this question to Jay.
No, quite right. There's absolutely nothing like it on the market.
Yeah. Could you explain in like a couple of sentences, you know, for people who've never heard of a company before, what is unique about this lab-grown leather?
Well, it's leather. It has the same structure and same properties as leather. It's made from the same stuff as leather, but it's grown in the lab rather than on an animal.
And then basically that's it, isn't it? I mean, the ethics are a lot better. Potentially the scalability of it is going to be a lot stronger.
The ethics are there, yeah. I mean, it's a sustainability angle. There's three aspects in terms of that. There's the animal ethics, which is important to some people, but it's not completely reliant on that. And the sustainability is a big one for lots of large, big and small companies with sustainability issues. Mm. And that's around how it's produced. But then lastly, it's around, because we're controlling that leather production, we can start to do new and exciting things with leather, which I'm sure we'll touch on.
Yes, indeed.
Just to dumb it down even more, which I always need, we're a tissue engineering company. So what we're doing is basically creating the tissue from the animal, which is the skin, and the skin is then tanned into leather. And that's the difference with a lot of other materials that are around are calling themselves leather, like, you know, mushroom leather and plant leather and vegan leather. This is actually, it does come from the animal. People don't, so it's not an alternative leather. It's actually leather of an animal just grown differently.
Yes, good. Now, I've written this article, which I'm sure you've all read, and people listening in, you know, want to know kind of about commercialization. So the first question I've got for you guys, this Newcastle pilot facility and industrial scale production, what kind of timeline are you looking at? Is it the next sort of couple of years, or are you trying to get that into production fairly quickly?
Well, I mean, it's the plans are over 8 years. So there's increase in production over each of those years.
Right. Okay. And then these brand collaborations that you have with quite kind of major brands, are they likely to evolve into formal offtake agreements once you're in production?
Yeah. Certainly, there'll be collaborations or deals done with them. Yes. Well.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. All right. And then between Elemental Plus and Elemental X, how's lab-grown leather going to prioritize between those three for their initial rollout? Is there one in particular you want to focus on, or is it going to be all three?
We are focusing on at the moment the Elemental X in the labs at the moment. So most of our efforts are going into the into the Tyrannosaurus Rex leather.
Which is obviously the exciting part. And I guess the key question is going to be, in terms of a pricing premium over animal and plant-based leathers, do you think you're going to be able to have a pricing premium over natural leather? Or is it going to be on par, maybe?
Well, the Elemental X, because we're bringing new to the world leathers, leathers that have never been seen before.
Yeah.
And handled before, and we know actually that the pricing will be significantly higher than traditional leather.
Oh, good. Significantly higher is what we want to hear. Yes. And then I guess beyond the City Mix savings, obviously using City Mix to save you a lot of money, what's that projected cost curve for scaling bioreactor production look like? Is it initially going to be fairly capex heavy, or do you think hopefully a bit capex light?
The capex comes kind of middle of those 8 years.
Okay, so we're okay.
The big chunk of it, yeah, is in the middle.
What we're really doing is, for the first few years, is scaling out, scaling out from the technology we've got and moving forward with a product that we can produce, which is not a great deal. It's not as if we're going into a huge meters upon meters of leather. It's high quality, unique leather that'll have a different price point. But then we'll move into scaling up and being able to produce a lot more through the various pilot facilities that we can develop.
Yeah, and I guess with the IP, so this is something that a question that investor sent in to me. What portion of this IP is patented, and what portion of it is kind of trade secret, and how enforceable are these protections internationally? Say, for example, you do sign a deal with a larger company, are your patents completely protected?
Well, I mean, I'd put that back to you and say, well, within any company, what proportion of their IP is know-how, and what proportion is patented?
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. And you would say it's a combination of both then.
Yeah, it's a combination of both, but I think you'd have to kind of firstly kind of understand what the average is for that, and I think you'll find the average is about 90 odd percent know-how and 10% hard IP.
Yeah.
So Shay, how long would it take somebody, even if they had the knowledge, to get to the position you guys are in?
10, 15 years.
Wow. So you're miles ahead in terms of the structure and how things work. But what is it that sets you apart, without giving us the secret, if you like?
Well, there's multiple things. There's the scaffold free is the one that we talk about, and there's a big, and it's largely a technical point, that in terms of we're not, all the structural elements that make leather recognizably leather in our products are generated by the cells in the same way that they are in the animal. Whereas the other forms of lab grown leather or leather alternatives use a synthetic scaffold of some description. And that the unfortunate part of that is that it's immediately obvious when you feel the material that you're feeling that synthetic scaffold, because they add it to give the structure. So once you feel it, you're feeling that scaffold. And the complexity of the natural arrangement of these scaffolding molecules is incredibly complex and can't be replicated in a manufacturing way. So like a
So what is it that actually means that you don't need scaffolding? I mean,
yeah, I
we
use
obviously went through the meat situation, and
yeah,
that
similar.
obviously still is a part. And I mean, I remember tasting the meats, the pork, whatever it was that we ate. It chewed. It was very much like meat, and the leather does the same thing. But what is the secret that means you don't need scaffolding where other companies do?
Well, I mean, a lot of it comes from all that years in the university research, developing 10, 15 years ago, deciding that we were going to try and get the cells to produce the material and not use a synthetic one. And then there's lots of learning, know-how, and IP around controlling cells to produce high amounts of extracellular matrix, which is the structural component of skin and leather and meat. We're going back to that point. So that's one big point. So nobody else is doing that, and as always, we've spent a long time doing it, and that now it's become we're getting the fruits of that, because one of their central advantages is that, as I said, the feel, the wear, the look of leather is due to the microscopic arrangement of the structural elements in there, and it's complex. And we use the cells to create that complex arrangement of the same structural elements. So the final product has all the same elements as leather. And if you don't do that, then you don't have leather, basically. You don't have leather in the way it feels, the way it wears, or anything else. So that's a big one. Another one, we're not using any coatings. All of the other, materials out there, they're all using large amounts of coatings, either to increase the thickness or to increase the feel, or probably most likely to increase the strength. So these coatings tend to be, petrochemical based, and that's not appealing to our customers or to the public.
Well, it's the luxury product angle, isn't it? If people want luxury products, they want real leather. And other products in the market, other replacements, they're replacements. You're not a replacement. You are the actual thing, which nobody else has. I guess that kind of poses the question, could lab-grown leather be eligible for carbon credits or green bonds or ESG-linked financing, given that nobody else can compete with you, potentially?
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, we did We had some discussions around that about a year or so ago. We haven't progressed it any further, but yeah, I think in principle, yes.
In principle, yes. And then I guess, this is, maybe a little bit esoteric, but other plant-based competitors, so ones working with like mushrooms like mycelium or maybe fruit waste levers, can they undercut you at all? Or is that virtually impossible just because they just won't have the same thing?
Undercut, well, most of the companies that made big companies made announcements on the mycelium have now backtracked and are not producing, and I've taken them off. Either off the market or have stopped doing it because it doesn't have the strength. And when we were speaking to a potential partner, they said that they purposefully didn't jump on that because they knew fundamentally it wouldn't have the strength characteristics. So they were quite pleased that they didn't jump on the mycelium bandwagon because they haven't had to retract it. Whereas there's several, and people can Google to find out which companies they are that have had to
They've
step
had
back
to,
from that.
yeah, or even offer refunds in some cases, haven't they? But I mean, with your lab, the labyrinth leather market, talking about a compound annual growth rate of around 14% to 2030. But I think that's based on, the current offerings in the market. And I'm guessing that's probably quite likely understated, right? I mean, there's $500 million have been invested into next gen materials over the past couple of years, 400 or more brand collaborations. Surely one needs to be coming down the track for you relatively soon, you would hope,
We'll
maybe.
see.
We'll see. We'll see.
That's certainly the hope, and we're talking to a lot of people and getting a lot of interest.
And yeah, I mean, I guess you're positioned as, rather than a commodity supplier, as a materials innovator. And also, it's this luxury first strategy, right? That you have, talking about the T-Rex leather, which, that little hook. But as you're growing, you want to target that luxury market first. And the partnerships that you're going after, I mean, over the next sort of 2 or 3 years, you say an 8 year time plan. What are you hoping to see? Are you hoping to see this leather, in high end luxury goods, on sale to the general public? Or, are the ambitions a bit higher than that, a bit lower? Do you want to scale it out? Once you've dealt with the luxury market, do you want to scale it out across, the whole of the leather market? What's the long term plan?
Certainly starting with luxury or indeed ultra luxury in the near term. So that's going beyond the kind of the well-known luxury brands into the ultra luxury space. And so in the T-Rex and some of the other new forms of leather that offer a uniqueness, and obviously the quality's there, but the uniqueness is there, which appeals to the particular buyers we're working towards for that near term. So we're talking next year kind of, term. But then a lot of the kind of markets are go in line with our increased production capacity. So if you don't have the capacity, then you can't access the different markets.
Obvious
So it's kind
reasons.
of it's so we've worked out a way of getting a beachhead product that allows us to generate revenue in the near term with a smaller capacity, and then open up the markets as the capacity increases, production capacity increases. And that, yeah, would be to luxury, to but then also, automobile, jewelry, a whole range of different markets. But it's more defined on identifying a niche within those that can work and respects what we can do and the capacity at a certain point.
As you go year by year, yeah. There's no point trying to fill a niche which is too large for your production capacity. But I mean, in terms of like a comparator, maybe what are in my mind, it's like the diamond market, right? Like artificial diamonds were created, and initially they were a fad, and then people realized, hang on, we can copy natural diamonds, do them much cheaper, much less water usage, much less carbon dioxide usage, much less waste, much less suffering, and now natural diamond prices have collapsed. But artificial diamonds are becoming more and more popular and generated a lot of capital. Would you say that's a fair comparator, maybe? And you're at the very early stage of that process?
It's not one I've looked into a great deal depth, but on the face of it, yes, it does sound like a similar position.
And then obviously there's huge advantages of using labyrinth leather. So the thickness, the strength, the uniformity is all programmable. It can be ultra thin, but also still durable. But from a regulatory moat point of view, the EUDR and ESG mandates, they favor lab grown leather over animal leather still. And I guess that regulatory moat, that's going to help you a lot, over the next sort of decade or so, as European Union, but not just European Union, just worldwide, trying to come up with, alternatives to animal leather. And I guess one of the big problems with it is that there are qualities in animal leather that you can't seem to replicate, right? So, for example, in like clothing, wool, like sheep wool, has largely been replaced by polyester. But with animal leather and certain specific applications, you can't replace it. You need to have it because it's the best at what it does. And I guess with what you have, you are just ahead of all the competition. And once you scale, potentially you'll be delivering leather cheaper than sourcing it from animal skin, naturally.
Yeah, eventually, yes, eventually
Eventually, the key word,
that'll be the
maybe.
case. Yeah, I mean, that's why I come back to that's the part of the business plan is to work on leathers that you can't buy. So, you mentioned that the thin lightweight leather getting a lot of interest in that. It has the same strength as thicker leather, but it's much thinner, much lighter, and that's appealing for different reasons for different sectors. Some like it because it's novel and it means they can do new things with leather. Some like it because of the saving in weight. So, and that's what you can't do that with traditional leather. It doesn't go below 0.4 mils, millimeters. And the animal that used to supply the best thin leather was the kangaroo. And we've seen a lot of sports manufacturers step back in the last 6 months from using kangaroo leather.
No, yeah.
So,
They've been jumping back, I think, Shay, not stepping
Yeah. And then likely with the,
back.
as we're showcasing the Elemental X with the Tyrannosaurus Rex, we're designing that process such that new forms of leather from different species or
Even
other
extinct
forms of
species.
leather,
Yeah.
can be brought on, within every 3 to 4 months. Again, addressing this initially areas where you cannot compete with traditional leather. There is no products out there that can compete in that space.
So basically, you're not just, hopefully going to replace other forms of leather. There are use cases where only BSFA's leather, lab-grown leather, can be used and nobody else's can because of those specific qualities. Yeah, good. I mean, the thing is, you're with the, the T-Rex, you're working with VML, which is a subsidiary of WPP. Obviously, that's a huge household name. When that first got announced, there was, huge media attention. Obviously, that's died down a little bit. But I'm guessing that, behind the scenes, you guys are working furiously hard to get this, not just, words on a media release, but, I'm thinking in my mind, a Lamborghini with T-Rex leather seats. That's what I want to see in the future. But maybe that's a bit, what's the word, optimistic. But in the longer term, can you see that kind of collaboration coming about? Because, there's something about T-Rex leather in the hyper luxury world. People are always looking for the next big thing or something that nobody else can has, or very small scale supply. And those are all things, with the ESG component as well. Those are all things that you guys fit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's the ultra luxury is where we're initially focusing these unique forms of leather, such as the T-Rex leather. And yeah, we are working, hard on meeting the timelines, and it's all going to plan. And we're still looking at sometime early next year for the what we're calling the showcase event, which is in partnership with VML. Who'll be designing and supporting the marketing campaign around that.
Yeah.
Charles, it's not just seats, remember, it could be many different things, even watch straps. If you could imagine, if we put together 50 T-Rex watch straps and auctioned them off, you can really
I can see how Omega or, one of the major watch brands would want to have that as a unique T-Rex watch. Like, because again, it's scarcity, right? Scarcity is what you're manufacturing. And I guess maybe that's a question sort of for the longer term, because initially, you're manufacturing scarcity. That'll, basically mean you can dictate your profit margin. Later on, you maybe want to go after the mass market many years down the line. But possibly, I mean, the reality is that even after 8 years, your ability to scale, unless you get significant financial funding, you're only going to be going after, ultra luxury and maybe down to the luxury level. But below that, maybe that's many, many years away. Would you say that's fair?
But it is a scenario, but it's not the scenario we're hoping for or planning for. There is there's a period of time where we develop out the scaled up process, but once that's out and proven, then creating a completely different, a separate factory doing the same thing won't take another 5 years to do. It
It'll be
takes
much quicker.
6 months. And so you could actually get to a point where you could rapidly increase production by mimicking the process and the factory in different places.
Okay, now I've got a technical question. This development of the T-Rex lever. Obviously, it's derived from synthetic T-Rex DNA. Can you explain how, like, in simple, you may not be able to explain it in simple words, but in simple words, how did you make this lever using T-Rex DNA?
So the there's fossilized remains of Tyrannosaurus rex.
Yeah.
There's bone and blood vessel fossilized protein fragments. Proteins are built from peptides, and what you find in these fossilized records are the peptide fragments. So you don't find a complete sequence that corresponds to a whole protein. You find bits of them
Okay.
in the fossilized records. So then what we're doing is we're taking those peptide sequences, these fragments, and then we analyze them and put them together in a way in which we believe would represent the entire sequence if a Tyrannosaurus rex was alive today. And the reason we can do that now is because of advancements in everyone's favorite AI tools. So there's some newly formed AI tools that allow you to, with great success, allow you to put these sequences together, these peptide fragments together, and create authentic or functional, at least, proteins. So once you have a protein sequence, then it's very simple, surprisingly, to turn that into DNA. And then you have a DNA strand which represents protein once it's been used by the cell as an instruction manual to create a protein. So then you use the cells to recreate those proteins
Right.
using the DNA.
That is, actually a lot simpler than I thought the answer would be, to be honest. I was getting the Jurassic Park theme in my head while you were saying it. You didn't use frog or toad DNA while you were doing it, did you? Just want to be
No.
sure. We
Yeah,
don't
no,
want
that
a repeat of that.
that's old. That's old school.
Old
Yeah,
school.
yeah.
AI, artificial intelligence, is the way forward, apparently. But I
It's
mean,
well, it just speeds it up, to be honest with you.
yeah.
It could be done more laboriously, but that would take, years, and this approach has taken weeks.
Fantastic. Well, artificial intelligence is shaking up in the world in ways, it's hard to imagine why, actually, particularly when you think about how what we have exposure to as a general public is almost certainly nothing compared to what private companies have behind the scenes. But I mean, you have this lab-grown lever. You sent out, this year, samples have been sent out to several, major fashion brands and they're being assessed, they're being developed. What's the feedback been from those fashion brands? I mean, maybe you haven't said in an RNS, but sort of maybe give a little bit of information out.
Well, I mean, the underlying or the most common request is, can we have more, and can we have more of it as soon as possible? That's what everybody says.
That's what we want to hear.
Yeah. It's been, and to be honest, it's been frustrating because, we'd like to be able to make more, and our plans are to make a lot more. We're just that's all part of the plans.
Of the multi-year plan. I mean, the
Yeah.
thing is, if they're happy with the product, and basically your constraining factor is money, right? The IP, the patent, the know-how you have, it's the money you need to scale quicker. I'm guessing the question is, once you have, as you're saying, maybe 50 watt straps, or once you get sort of those initial ultra-high luxury products out there, will those fashion houses be happier to give you more finance so that you can scale faster? I'm presuming the answer is yes, but maybe there's an indication of that behind their replies.
Yeah, that's a, it's a, it's a, it's a different, I guess the challenge is that with this material is that it's a new form of material that is made in a different way, and it's a step change in what it can do and how it can be used. But they would rather it was just like another form of viscose, or because then they could say, let's give us 10 meters and, we can play with it. So once we get to that stage, which we will do soon, in a year or so, then yeah, we fully expect it's a different conversation. It's a different part of the organization, and the kind of investment to scale out the production is fairly straightforward.
So, Jeff, how does it sit then financially in terms of the overall Topco? Where are we at? You were talking off camera there that you'd had some monies come in, and so do you want to say something on that?
Yeah, just in regard to Lab-Grown Leather, we've put out RNS and updates through the year and indicated to the market that we're looking to raise money at a subsidiary level, so not to dilute the group and the shareholding at public company level. And that's proceeding quite well. We've got bogged down into summer and frustrating to get a number of funds closed out to provide investment directly into lab-grown leather. So that's, and as we talk today, that's where a lot of the funds will go to accelerate the development of lab-grown leather. At the group level, we've got cash to comfortably get by. Just recently, as I was saying to you, we've received our EIT funds, which were trailing a bit and running a couple of months late. But that's come where we've got about half of the £274,000 that we're expecting, and we're getting the rest in September, plus R&D tax credits of just over £100,000 were received just recently. So from a cash point of view, we're going okay. But as we all know, we're a business that needs cash. We're going through a transition from pre-revenue to a revenue-producing company, and you know there's always a need for cash.
Yeah, but the major cash that you require in this business is going to be done at asset level, if you like, as in it will not be the top code, which is BS&FA.
Correct, and we're doing a capital raising at Karata, which is the cornea business, where it has the cornea IP. And that's a similar raise through some private equity funds at the subsidiary level.
Okay, well, we look forward to hearing from you over the next few months about how these things progressing, and I look forward to my Tyrannosaurus Rex bracelet coming in the post, Shay. I'll send you the address, because my son will be very excited about this, regardless of the watch that it's attached to.
I just, Dev, you, in my mind, it'll be like, you know, like a child's Casio watch, right? It won't be, with like little, you know, T Rexes on the edge of it. And maybe that'll be a button and like, you know, like
don't
a
even,
light up.
Yeah, I don't even wear watches, but my son would be absolutely amazed. It would be fantastic. And I think there are so many, not novelty, but there are so many different ways that this could be used, that I think once you get a strong platform in one situation, then I think it's going to be very easy to replicate this in many different ways. And I think that's really where the beauty will come from the leather. I mean, there's no doubt the fashion houses can use this, both from an ethical point of view, from a viewpoint that they're going to get consistency, it's going to be good quality, it's going to be the right colours, it's going to be all of the different things that are required. So it actually, I believe, will be better than the real thing as time goes by.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, it already is better than the real thing. We've already done that one.
Says Shay. It's already better than the real thing. That's the tagline. Yeah. It's already better than the real thing. Anyway, thanks for coming and talking to us again, guys. And we look forward to speaking to you in the not too distant future.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Charles. Been great.
Yes. Thank you, Charles.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net